always on the go, but the day just won't be one without your Hollywood fix. Let Golden State Media Concepts Entertainment Podcast take care of that. An all-inclusive look of pop culture.
Greetings, people of Earth and the known universe. You're listening to Golden State Media Concepts Entertainment Podcast. This is your Captain Keith. And on deck, we've got some entertainment for you. Yes, we do. Janet Jackson's struggle. The return of SZA and Jesse Paige. And so much more. Let's get to it. So, you ever wonder what happened to 702? You know, where are my girls at? 702. They reflect in the bittersweet career for TV One's Unsung. And those of you who don't know, TV One's a network and they do Unsung. And it's amazing. It's always like a behind the scenes music, but for like with urban music, soul, jazz, reggae, you name it. So it's the other side of the coin that you usually don't see. They don't even really do behind the music anymore. That used to be a great thing to watch on the MTV and VH1 or VH1. Yeah, so I miss stuff like that. But I digress. 702, career, reflection, bittersweet. Let's do it. All right. So Sunday night's episode, or this past Sunday night's episode of TV One's Unsung, it featured legendary group 702. They hailed from the city of Las Vegas. They shot to stardom in the mid-90s with a handful of top 10 hits and platinum album success. Originally signed as a quartet, the group's record label decided to re-debut 702 as a trio on 1996, teaming original members Misha and Irish Grinstead with new addition Mila Williams. Under the production of Missy Elliott, 702 went on to earn gold certification in 1996 with the hip-hop-infused single Stilo, followed by platinum success on female empowerment anthem titled Where My Girls At? Okay, all right. In 1999. However, as 702's music was bonding women around the world, the band was plagued by infighting, ultimately leading to their disbanding in 2003. That's like 15 years ago. Wow. After years of silence, the members of 702 share their long and winding journey with Unsung, which they described as surreal and bittersweet. It's a blessing, but it's also a little intimidating because you have to pull all of your stuff out there and rehash old things and open old wounds, Mila tells us of the Unsung episode. You hope and pray that things don't resurface to get back in those places that you are at that led to the demise. So it's those kinds of things that concern you that make you a little reluctant in the beginning. But overall, I'm happy. Of course, we'll never feel like every part of the story was told. Okay, that's fair. Definitely. So there's a question and answer period with Misha, Irish, and Mila. So they talk about the sisterhood that's formed when you're a member of an iconic R&B girl group. Misha says, it's great to be able to look upon your sisters. It's not just a girl power thing. It's a bond between three girls that grew up singing in high school together. It's amazing to watch ourselves grow and mature into women and also in our career. The sisterhood, the bond, and the friendship have always been great. And Irish says, we share so much, things that nobody else will get except for us. So it's good to go through it and cry, laugh, scream all together. It's our story. We know that we're each going through. We know what we're each going through. Let me rephrase that. And so we learn from Unsung just how much influence Michael Bivins had on the early years of your career, even changing the group's name to 702. See, I didn't even know that. I have to watch this episode. Mila. He wanted to change the name because initially it was Sweeter Than Sugar. And I think he wanted to explain who we are in the music, and the Sweeter Than Sugar name wasn't one that would carry us into adulthood. Okay, so our name had to be reinvented, and we were going over concepts. Mike was dialing our number and actually dialed the area code, and that's how he decided that was the right name for the group, 702. was the best way to describe who we were, because we're three girls coming from Vegas and who wouldn't want to hear about that. All right. Yeah. Okay. Point taken. That's true. When you reflect on your career, is there a particular moment together, planned or not, that always gives you a laugh or a big smile when you think of it? Iris says, there's one moment we always share before we got on stage. We always knew that if one of us had to pee, it was going to be a good show. Oh, that's cute. Okay. We weren't avid soda drinkers, but we actually made ourselves believe that if we had a drink of soda, it would make our voices come out better. So I love reliving those types of moments. That part I miss so much about my sisters. That is a nice, funny, quirky story. I can dig that. Okay. And then Misha, my favorite thing to recall is our old hairdresser, John Godden. He would actually go on the road with us, so we have all sorts of fond memories of John Gooden. It's either Gooden or Godden. There's a typo here. But one that stands out is when he caught himself writing us a song. And he had us practicing the song. John Gooden was good at hairdos, but I don't think he knew how to write songs that well. So if John Gooden is reading this, we miss you and we love you. To this day, we still laugh at that and still know the words to the song that he wrote us. Well, it must not have been that bad if you remember it. You might want to record it. If I had to, and Mila says, if I had to recall a moment that sticks out the most, it's when we were on tour and we were on our tour bus and we were running late and we were the openers for the New Edition tour. I think there was a traffic jam or something, but we got off the bus while it was still on the highway and we could see the venue from where we were and we didn't have time to wait, so we got off the bus and ran and run on the side of the highway. Irish. I remember that, Mila, and it was raining and we made it work. We made it to that stage, says Mila. Wow, that is impressive. That's when you know you're talking about some artists who have ambition and drive. They got off their tour bus and ran down the street to make it to their gig. An R&B singing group doing this. Oh, that's impressive. Okay. And then what's your favorite 702 song? Irish states this. I still love you only because it's the one that was slept on the most, but it was the one that was so solid and it just had a pulse to it. It had a heartbeat, and I love music like that. Music that's going to get you on your feet. I love that record. Thank you, Pharrell Williams. I love him for that. Oh, that's nice. Mila, I still love you. But since Irish already said it, I'm going to go with Finding My Way, which was on our first album. It wasn't a single. It's a beautiful record, and I can listen to that to this day. It doesn't sound dated. You could play it today, and it would sound new and fresh. I really love that record because it had a really good vibe. And then, let's see. Misha says, my favorite song is Get It Together, but during the process of recording that song, it was hell because it took us 3 days to complete the song because of how meticulous Donnell Jones was in getting the record to sound the way he wanted it to sound. But the reason I love that song the most is because of the back meaning behind it. My husband is in that video with me, and we've been together for 25 years. So to have him in the video is an experience itself, and I guess that's why it stands out as one of my favorite songs, because it's actually when we really dedicated ourselves fully to one another. And from then on, it's been us ever since. That's very nice. And then Irish, none of us brought up a favorite Missy song, because that's too hard. You can't think of 702 without thinking of Missy. She was the beginning of us. When we started recording in Las Vegas, she flew out here. She didn't have money. We didn't have money. We're all in the studio broke, and we made it work with Missy. Her artistry is so honest, and she's so funny. You will never work with Missy and not laugh. I enjoy being in the studio with her, and she'll always be like that big sister to me. She is a living legend way before her time. Missy is almost like a member of the group because she was so much a part of 702. We didn't go to the studio without her. That's very nice to know. And she is a great artist. I agree. I think she's amazing. Mila, for the third album, we weren't able to work with her, but the songs we did together are quite memorable and have contributed to our musical legacy. So we're grateful for that. So, and then lastly, there's our rumors, speculation, or myths about 702 that you clear up. Mila, I would love to clear up the fact that I never left the group seeking a solo deal. I never got a solo deal from Motown or anyone until now, 20 years later. And the only time I was paid more was to rejoin the group for the third time, which was something that I negotiated with my attorney. It was not anything that was secret, but more so just a business move on my behalf. So unfortunately, Unsung is a short episode and you're not able to get all of the logistics because it's three women telling their story. But I just wanted to clarify that. I never left 702 based on having the motive to go solo. That was never my short or long-term objective. It just played out that way because of some other things that got in the way. But thankfully, we found our way back to each other. Okay. That's good. And then Misha, back in the past, me being as vocal as I was could be misconstrued as being bossy or mean. But I was very strong-minded, as I am to this day, and very vocal about how I felt in each situation. I just want to clear that up because a lot of times that made me look like I was the bad guy when overall I was always looking out for the best interest of all three of us. So Unsung airs every Sunday at 9/8 p.m. Central Time. So check it out. It's a good program. SZA says, the return of SZA, folks. SZA says her voice is not permanently damaged and returns to the stage at the Firefly Festival. Quote, I am blessed to say my voice is not permanently damaged and I've been working daily to get back. SZA claimed her voice was permanently damaged in a since deleted series of tweets in late May after New York City Top Dog Entertainment Championship Tour performance at Madison Square Garden didn't go as planned. After temporarily being removed from the tour and working diligently with doctors and vocal technicians for the month of June, the TDE singer made her return to the stage at Firefly Music Festival on Sunday night. Before her return performance, the New Jersey native assured fans that her voice is not actually permanently damaged. That's good. Thank you to the incredible team of doctors and vocal technicians that have taken time to see me over the last few weeks in every city. I'm blessed to say my voice is not permanently damaged and I've been working daily to get back slowly but surely. SZA originally made fans aware of her dire vocal situation in a now deleted May Instagram post. I've been touring for 11 months. This didn't happen overnight. I've been troubleshooting for a while now and usually steroids and pushing through help. They don't this time. I'm not sick. My voice just won't effing work. If I don't pause now, I'll be forced to pause permanently. I'm genuinely sorry for every face, voice, and energy field I won't be touching. I'm literally taking as many steroids as I can to speed this up. It's a waiting game and super weird to be blamed for stuff out of my control. But I get it. Again, I'm sorry. I'll be right back. Pray for me or don't. Appreciate you either way. All right. Well, SZA, we're glad that you're back in action. So, and that album Control is a great record. Let's say that. Yes, it's a great record. And I look forward to seeing her live so I can see for myself. Yeah, about the voice. Chio Hadari Coker says, music is key in Luke Cage 2. And yes, folks, in Entertainment Wonderland, Luke Cage Season 2 will come back June 22nd. And I believe that is this Friday. So Netflix season 2, when we've been waiting for the return of Luke Cage, and you got 2 days to go and he'll be here. Looking forward to it. It should be a great season. First season was great. So let's see what Ms. Chio Hadari Coker has to say. Luke Cage viewers can pump up the volume during season 2 in an exclusive interview. Okay. Mr. Coker is the showrunner. He says music will continue to be a key element in the show, in addition, of course, to its kick-ass action. So what can we expect from Luke Cage Season 2? Now, as a public superhero in Harlem, you will see what it's like for Luke Cage to be a superhero in the age of the internet. What it's like for him in an age where people basically try to capture your triumphs and your failures in real time. Luke is also confronted with a villain named Bushmaster, who has a version of his powers. Luke will actually go up against someone who could take him on physically. So we explore how that changes Luke's view of himself. Plus, we go deeper into the complexities of other characters. There we go. So we look forward to seeing that. Don't forget, folks, June 22nd on Netflix, Luke Cage Season 2. Messy. Prince's estate want to leave Tidal over reports of inflated streaming numbers. So for those of you who don't know, Tidal is a streaming service that is owned by Jay-Z. It's always claimed to be a streaming service that actually pays its musicians higher royalty rates. So, and they also have FLAC files, which means when you're streaming with FLAC files, there's less compression. There's no compression, really. It's supposed to be a better quality of music resolution when you're listening to your music. We'll be back with more after this break.
Want to find out what movies to go see? Then check out the GSMC Movie Podcast. It's your ticket to the latest movies, whether it's a new blockbuster event, romantic, comedy, or action flick. This show has got it all covered. They talk some what to go see now. Don't bother. What's hot on Netflix and everything in between? That's GSMCpodcast.com/movie-podcast. When it's all about the movies, it has to be this new show. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit GSMCpodcast.com for more info.
Back once again, you're listening to Golden State Media Concepts Entertainment Podcast. This is your Captain Keith, and with entertainment news, we have the story about Tidal, Jay-Z, and Prince. So let's get to it. Once again, an artist, or in this case, a late artist family, wants nothing to do with Jay-Z's Tidal music streaming service. Now that the company is being accused of making up its streaming numbers, Prince's heirs want out. The attorney for Sharon, Noreen and John Nelson blew the whistle on Tidal with the probate judge in Prince's case. In a letter obtained by TMZ, they say Tidal's been accused of inflating the streaming numbers for Beyonce's Lemonade and Kanye West's The Life of Pablo. Okay, but you guys are making accusations on two very successful popular records. So I don't know if that's going to pan out for you. They say Tidal allegedly boosted the numbers by several hundred million streams, which would jack up the royalties paid to Bay and Ye. The heirs are asking the judge to reconsider the order that granted Tidal exclusive streaming rights for an upcoming album of unreleased Prince music. They say they don't want the estate getting caught up in the streaming service legal problems. It was a Norwegian outlet, Dagens Næringsliv, if I'm saying that right, and forgive me if I'm butchering it, sorry, that originally accused Tidal of deliberately faking streaming numbers for artists like Beyonce and Kanye West. Tidal, of course, denied these allegations. They told Complex they were part of a larger anti-Tidal smear campaign. I mean, yeah. Kanye West and Beyonce are household names in this country. So Their records do well. So, and let me finish the story. I'm saying, this is a smear campaign from a publication that once referred to our employee as an Israeli intelligence officer and our owner as a crack dealer. Wow. We expect nothing less from them than this ridiculous story, lies, and falsehoods. The information was stolen and manipulated, and we will fight these claims vigorously, the company said. No matter how you slice it, this is not a good look for Jay-Z and Tidal. Not a good look at all. Well, it's not, but we'll see what happens with that story as it progresses. Lenny Kravitz believes his race factored into a loss of the Big Little Lies role. Lenny Kravitz is convinced he lost out on a role on HBO's hit TV show Big Little Lies because producers were uncomfortable with the idea of a black man playing the villain. The series, based on Leanne Moriarty's novel of the same name, featured an all-star cast of mostly white women, including Reese Witherspoon, Nicole Kidman, and Shailene Woodley. Kravitz's daughter, though, Zoe Kravitz, was the lone woman of color in the cast. Okay. There's a picture of the cast sitting on like a love seat. And, you know, it's a nice picture. Yeah, nice picture. There's a lot of makeup, though. A lot of makeup. Lenny was reportedly considered to play one of the husbands in the drama, but is adamant being The only black man on the show was a disadvantage during auditions. Excuse me, but is adamant being the only black man on the show was a disadvantage during auditions. Interesting. Okay. The word that came back to me was that if I was the only black man on the show, they didn't want me doing what it was that I would be doing, he told the BBC. Okay. So that ended up not happening. The director, Jean-Marie Vallée, was like, I so want you for this, but we'll work together another time. Okay. When probed on what character he was up for, Lenny responded, I can't really say, but it appears he's referring to Celeste Wright's abusive husband, Perry, a role eventually given to Swedish actor Alexander Skarsgård, who won both an Emmy and a Golden Globe for his performance. Kravitz says he can't be too upset over the missed opportunity because his daughter ended up cast as a bohemian yoga teacher, Bonnie, in the drama. I'm much more happy that she got the role, he smiled. It worked out wonderfully. The rocker also squashed rumors that he would be joining the show for its second season, which will star Meryl Streep, after it was revealed Bonnie's father could enter the drama. Okay. As fun as that sounds, that's not going to happen, he said. But I love all the ladies in the show. I actually just saw them in L.A. We had a birthday party for Reese Witherspoon, and it was wonderful being with all the ladies and my daughter. Okay. It's very nice. Ava Longoria gives birth to baby boy. So we're very happy for Miss Longoria. She's a mom now. The 43-year-old actress and her husband, Jose Pepe Bastin, welcomed their first child together, a baby boy. The couple shared their news with Hola USA, touching hospital photos of the new mom with her little boy on the cover. Ava's son is named Santiago Enrique Bastin, and he was born on Tuesday at the Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles. He weighed 6 pounds and 13 ounces at birth. Santiago's a great name. I like that. And Santiago Enrique, that's very cool. I like that. We are so grateful for this blessing, Longoria told Hola USA, who was wearing a Santiago necklace in the images. This is Longoria's first child, while Bastón is father to four children, daughters Natalia and Mariana and sons Sebastian and Jose from a previous marriage. There's a picture from the Hola magazine with Ava snuggling with her baby. It's a really cute picture. It's nice. He's got a little hat, a little cap on his head. Babies can be so small and tiny. Longoria and Bastón tied the knot on May 21st, 2016, and announced that they were expecting their first child together in December 2017 on New Year's Day. The former telenovela star shared a sweet photo of herself cradling and her tiny baby bump via Instagram. Okay, yeah, she's a telenovela star, but she's also, you know, the Desperate Housewives star. She was great on that TV show. And yes, folks, I watched that show. I think I told you that last week. Yes, I did, and I loved it. New year, new adventure, she captioned the pic. I'm so grateful to my beautiful family for giving this new baby so much love already. So, and, you know, Ava had spoken about a pregnancy several times before the birth. When she revealed her unexpected lack of cravings and dished on potential baby names, she stated, "I don't have any cravings. I have the opposite of cravings," she dissed. "I actually don't like chicken right now since I got pregnant, and I used to eat chicken daily. My husband ordered it the other day, and I'm like, why would you do that?" And she stated, this is before, you know, her baby was born. As for her son's name, she added, "We are Mexicans, so we're very traditional. It'll be a long name." That's cute. Let's see. She also did, when she had a baby shower, she shared on social media, she just talked about how she, was going to go on maternity leave, and she couldn't wait to meet her little man. So that was cool. "I can't wait to meet him," she declared. "I want to know what he's like and who he looks like." So congratulations to her family. That's very exciting. I think she'll be a very happy and great mom. So we're happy for you, Miss Longoria. Kim Kardashian says North is like Kanye because she'll speak up no matter who it might offend. Northwest is a firecracker, just like her dad. That's what Kim Kardashian West told E.T.'s Carly Steele at her first ever KKW beauty and fragrance pop-up shop at Westfield Century City on Tuesday. She's a Gemini, so she's a little bit of both me and Kanye West, the reality star explained. She definitely has Kanye's outgoing personality and will say what's on her mind no matter what it is and who it might offend. But then she's sweet like me, Kim added, so she's a little bit of both. North celebrated her fifth birthday last Friday in New York City, where she made headlines for stepping out looking all grown up with long hair. It's funny, everybody thought she was wearing extensions and she wasn't. That's her hair. She just has really curly hair, Kim said, and I don't really let her straighten her hair. But it was on her birthday party. And on her birthday trip to New York, she wanted straight hair. So that was her thing. She really is into beauty. She loves hair looks. That's her thing. She loves a little bit of makeup, Kim shared. While North shares a personality with her dad, she clearly has the same fashion sense as her mom. North received two Alexander Wang bags from the designer. And Kim says she already secretly stole one of them. It's in my closet now. She actually saw it and she stole it back. So we're already fighting over bags, she confessed. That's funny. As for how the keeping up with the Kardashian star keeps her daughter grounded when she's given such expensive gifts, Kim said it's simple. North has no idea what they are. What I do for her birthday, she gets gifts, and then she has to be really good and earn the things and do her chores and walk her dog, she revealed. We have a chore chart that she has to make her bed. She has so many things she has to do if she wants to get something. So she doesn't really get a whole lot of stuff like you would think. Okay. Of course, the most important thing is being nice to her siblings. It goes up and down. Kim said of North learning to finally be polite to her little brother, Saint. She definitely has been better since little baby was here. Saint and Chicago's relationship is so sweet that I don't know what's going to top that. That's nice. And Janet Jackson's struggle. Janet Jackson talks her battle with depression. The struggle was intense. Quote, Ms. Jackson is speaking out. The 52-year-old pop icon pens a letter to her fans in the new issue of Essence magazine, which was shared on Wednesday's Good Morning America, about her journey and the lessons she has learned over the course of her life. I struggle with depression. The struggle was intense, Jackson writes about her 30s. Low self-esteem might be rooted in childhood feelings of inferiority. It could relate to failing to meet impossibly high standards. And of course, there are always the societal issues of racism and sexism. Put it all together and depression is a tenacious and scary condition. Thankfully, I found my way through it. Jackson went on to say in the present day, it's the love of her one-year-old son, is it Issa Almana, that brings her so much joy. The height of happiness is holding my baby son in my arms and hearing him coo. And when I look into his smiling eyes and watch him respond to my tenderness, she writes of her little boy, when I kiss him, when I sing him softly to sleep. During those sacred times, happiness is everywhere. There's a very nice picture of Janet. This might be the Essence cover, not sure. There's these dancers. They're jumping up around her like in a circle, and she's sitting in the middle of this floor, looking to the left, and she's got like these black boots and this red, like fluffy, feathery, like dress that extends over on the floor. It's a really cool picture, actually. Also in the Essence letter, Janet Jackson writes about the hashtag MeToo movement and female empowerment. We are living in a time in history where women all over the world are refusing to be controlled, manipulated, exploited, or abused, she declares. We have found our strength and we will not relent. When Jackson reflected on her early years as a child, she said, I was happy when my brothers came home from performing on the road. I was happy when my mother lavished me with love, but I wasn't happy with the way I looked. As for her teens, the star wrote, happiness came when people asked me to perform, but I was happiest when I was pleasing others and not myself. An older and wiser Janet might have said, true happiness is knowing you're doing the best you can. Jackson did not touch on her current ongoing custody battle with her ex, Wissam Almana. So there'll be more news about that very soon. And when we come back from break, is Charles still in charge or not? Scott Baio won't face charges over Nicole Eggert's sexual abuse allegations. We'll dig into that after this break.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be. Visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Back once again, you're listening to Golden State Media Concepts Entertainment Podcast. This is your Captain Keith, and now we're back with Chachi, also known as Charles in Charge, Charles Scott Baio. Let's see what the deal is with Mr. Baio. So apparently he will not be facing charges stemming from allegations of sexual abuse leveled against him by former Charles in Charge co-star Nicole Eggert. On Tuesday, the Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office declined to press charges against the actor after Eggert filed a police report in February. According to the DA's evaluation of the case, the applicable statute of limitations to the crimes alleged by the victim have expired. Thus, the case is declined. Ouch. While there is currently no statute of limitations on cases involving sexual assault between an adult and a minor, there was a 3-year statute of limitations placed in the 1980s when Eggert claims the assault occurred, meaning the deadline to press charges passed many years ago. In a statement to ET on Wednesday, Baio said the news marks the end of a sad chapter. Nicole Eggert dedicated herself to destroy my reputation and harming my family, and she has failed, the statement reads. The Los Angeles District Attorney's conclusion to their investigation of her ever-changing stories marks the end of a sad chapter. Along the way, Eggert has defamed and harassed my family, friends, my wife's charitable foundation, the families of the children that foundation helps, and many others. It's hard to imagine anyone taking her seriously again. For the last several months, my advisors have conducted their own investigation, which is well documented and was presented to the police and district attorney. The statement continues. It showed that Nicole Eggert's statements were part of a plan created long before her police report with the intent of relaunching her own career. To reiterate, her false charges were conceived in advance for personal gain. We also presented multiple witness statements who knew Eggert well at the time the show was made and presented an entirely different portrait of her behavior and motivations for her false charges against me. Unlike Nicole Eggert, most claims of sexual assault and harassment are honest. My heart goes out to those who have been harmed, the statement concludes. As bad as Nicole Eggert's actions against me were, she has hurt them even more if they are doubted for even one moment because of her untrue allegations. I hope that does not happen, and I will do my best to support them. In the police report filed with the LAPD back in February, the actress, now 46, claims that Baio sexually abused her beginning when she was 14 years old. Baio previously denied Eggert's sexual abuse claims, saying she is probably wrong. She's probably wrong and deliberately lying. Excuse me, she's provably wrong and deliberately lying. While he denied having a sexual relationship when she was underage, he did say the two had consensual sex well after she turned 18. Eggert first went public with her allegations against Baio and a tweet posted in January, which asked at Scott Baio, what happened in his garage at his house when I was a minor? Creep. In an interview with Megyn Kelly, Edgar claimed that Bale expressed interest in her immediately when she began working on Charles in Charge in September 1986. Bale would have been 25 at the time. He immediately took to me and befriended me and earned my trust. And then he started expressing his love for me and talking about marriage in the future, she alleged. And then I was still 14 before my 15th birthday. And we were at his house in his car in his garage. And he reached over and he penetrated me with his finger. And that's when the sexual touching and abuse started. One day after Edgar's interview with Kelly, Bale sat down with Good Morning America, where he insisted that he and Edgar only had sex when she was an adult, and accused Edgar of changing her story about the alleged incident multiple times. I'm trying to figure out which time she's lying and which time she's not lying, because the story seems to change quite a bit, Bale told Good Morning America. I can't keep up with her, honestly. Okay, and then more news. And then more news. Kylie Jenner, Travis Scott, and Stormy take family trip to France. Okay. So it's a picture of Travis Scott with Kylie at some carpet affair. Okay. They look pretty good, actually. It's a nice picture. Travis Scott had a gig in France, so he and Kylie Jenner made the trip a family affair. The two jetted off from Los Angeles on Wednesday on a private jet with their four-month-old daughter, Stormy, spelled with an I, as well as two nannies, Kylie's assistant, and a group of friends, including Kylie's BFF, Jordan Woods. They landed in Nice and then headed to Cannes. I need to say that. I didn't need to repeat that so many times. A source states that exclusively, Travis is set to perform at Spotify's beach party at the Cannes Lions Festival that night. It was a big group, and they looked like they were ready to have some fun, the source says. This is not baby Stormy's first trip abroad. Several weeks ago, Kylie and Travis brought the child with them on vacation on the Turks and Caicos Islands in honor of the rapper's 26th birthday. Travis has yet to share photos from their France trip, while Kylie has stopped posting pictures of their baby. Earlier this month, she deleted from her Instagram page all photos showing Stormy's face. Yeah, I cut my baby out. I'm not sharing photos of my girl right now, she said, without elaborating. Okay? Nothing wrong with protecting your child. I get it. Jesse Williams from Grey's Anatomy. Jesse pays. Jesse Williams ordered to pay ex-wife more than $100,000 per month in spousal and child support. It's a picture of them during happier times. Jesse Williams has been ordered to pay more than $50,000 a month in child support. Court documents obtained show that Williams has been ordered to pay his ex-wife, Erin Drake Lee, $50,629 in child support for their two children, Sadie and Maceo, starting on July 1st. Combined with the $50,695 a month he was ordered to pay Drake Lee for spousal support in January, Williams will be paying his ex over $100,000 per month. So at what point do you realize that it might be better to have full custody? The court signed off on the order on Tuesday, stating that the $521,000 Williams brings in each month give him an extraordinarily high income. So wait a minute, he's getting like $500,000 a month from Grey's Anatomy. Wow. That's amazing. That's, wow. I can't even fathom that. Okay, according to the document, Williams stated that he thought $11,291 was an appropriate amount for child support. In addition to the $7,465 he pays for school tuition, uninsured medical and certain other expenses. Okay. Williams filed for divorce from Drake Lee in April 2017 after 5 years of marriage. Drake Lee originally requested sole physical custody of Sadie and Maceo, but the pair was granted joint physical custody in March. Okay. So, you know, I wish there was this blues singer named Johnny Taylor, and I wish he was still around because I would have loved to have seen him. I got into him late in the game, and then he died shortly afterwards. But his most famous song was called "It's Cheaper to Keep Her." And that was a huge song. He had another song called "Stop Dogging Me Around." I like too. But yeah. Yeah, it's a great song. I like that song a lot. So, and I wish I could see him in concert, but he's no longer here. May he rest in peace. Johnny Taylor. You should look him up. Look him up. So, wow. And in more news, the hip hop queen of soul, Mary J. Blige, just in time for the summer, y'all. She's single. She is single. Mary J. Blige is officially a single woman. A judge signed off Wednesday on her divorce from Martin Isaacs. The exes had reached a settlement back in March, but had hammered out details of their, assets split. They've now worked out the specifics, but they're keeping it all under wraps. The terms are confidential, according to the new, documents. It's unclear if Martin got his wish list, which included $130,000 per month in spousal support. Maybe it's cheaper to keep him too. I don't know. Mary and Martin got married in 2003, and they do not have any kids together. I'm just like, wow. Okay. Heather Locklear hospitalized after emergency call. Sources say she threatened to kill herself. Heather Locklear, Locklear of, let's roll it off in the 80s, major TV star, huge sex symbol back then. Heather Locklear was a co-star of T.J. Hooker with William Shatner, a great TV cop show I used to love to watch. She also was a great co-star on Dynasty, the original nighttime soap opera starring John Forsythe. Excellent show. She played the original Sammy Joe. Now, that cast, that character has been turned into a male for the new Dynasty series that's on the CW. And she was also... what else did she do? So, T.J. Hooker, Dynasty, and I believe she was on Melrose Place. Yeah. So Heather, yeah, Heather did her thing. So sorry to hear this news. Let's report on this story. She is hospitalized after an emergency call. A spokesperson for the Ventura County Sheriff's Department told stated that early Monday that they had responded to the 56-year-old actress home around 3:50 p.m. on a Sunday. Our deputies responded along with Ventura County Fire. The spokesperson said, when we responded and contacted the person at the residence, we determined that there was no crime. It was strictly a medical call. There was a patient that was transported to a local hospital. When asked if there were any guns or weapons discovered at the scene during the time of the incident, the spokesperson said he was not aware of any being found, saying they, the deputies, would have said something to me if something like that had occurred. A source close to Locklear claims that the family called the police on Sunday after the actress was acting erratically and threatened to kill herself. The source says Locklear is now claiming she was kidding around and never would have done that, though the source believes it didn't seem anything like a joke. Suicide is no laughing matter. It is nothing to kid about at all. Her family was scared for her, the sources say. She was aggressive and attacked her mother. She seemed out of control again, so they called the police. They felt they had no choice. Usually they want to keep their family issues private, but this was far too volatile, the source adds. They want nothing more than to be supportive and have always been there for her, but things keep getting worse. The source also tells ET that after months of working with a sober coach, the family believes Locklear is no longer sober, according to our source. Her family wants nothing more for her than to be checked into a facility until she finally truly is clean and sober. As for where things currently stand with Locklear and her longtime boyfriend, Chris Hessler, Heather and her boyfriend, Chris, seem to have worked out their differences since the last domestic dispute, but they still fight nonstop, the source claims. This latest outburst occurred after he threatened to end their relationship. This is one of many times he has threatened to end their relationship, But this time she took it to heart. Heather's family doesn't support her relationship with Chris, and Heather feels like her family meddles in her business. So she was furious, and that is what they were fighting about, the source says. The family should have been having a happy Father's Day, but instead, everything ended in turmoil. The relationship always seems to be at a breaking point, but then they repeatedly work things out. We'll be back with more entertainment news after this break.
Golden State Media Concepts bring you Book Review Podcast, a haven for bookworms of all ages and the widest genres, from mystery to memoirs, romance to comedy, fantasy to sci-fi. If you love to read, this is the podcast for you. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Book Review Podcast.
And yes, welcome back to Golden State Media Concepts Entertainment Podcast. This is Captain Keith. We were doing some entertainment news on TV star Heather Locklear. It's been a rocky year for Ms. Locklear, who was arrested in February for an incident at a home involving Heiser, the Melrose Place star, who was facing four counts of misdemeanor battery on an officer and one charge of resisting or obstructing an officer, entered a not guilty plea in April. A domestic violence call was reported on the residence on February 25th. And in an initial investigation, police alleged that Locklear had battered Heiser at the residence prior to their arrival. During the arrest, police said Locklear became combative and uncooperative and allegedly battered three deputies. Wow. Okay. Following their arrest and her longtime battle with substance abuse, Locklear entered a treatment facility in March. Locklear's 20-year-old daughter, Ava, begged her mom to go to rehab. Heather is getting the help she finally needs, the source says. Ava wants her mother to get clean and sober once and for all. Her family wants to see her focus on her health and sobriety, an additional source added. Right now, Heather is sober and she is in therapy. She's taking it one day at a time. So we'll see what happens. I just never thought in a million years I'd be reporting a story about that. So it's kind of crazy. And in more news. Oh, yeah. The chicken versus the model. The Bachelorette's epic 2-on-1 is here. All right. The showdown we've all been waiting for is just about here. It might also be the showdown we've all been dreading. But either way, it's here. There's an exclusive promo of the explosive Bachelorette date that pits male model Jordan against his nemesis, David the Chicken. I can't even make this stuff up. I just can't. I mean, Jordan has been an annoyance since his high levels of screen time on night one, and David has done nothing but complain about Jordan ever since we found out what he looked like out of the chicken suit. He did take a break from his complaints when he fell out of his bed and broke his nose and had to go to the hospital. But now it looks like his face is healed and he's ready to take Jordan down once and for all. All right. Okay. Unfortunately for both of them, we're kind of getting the sense that neither is long for the Bachelorette world. Just based on the look on Becca's face as they go back and forth and back and forth and so on and so forth. She even says that she could move forward with neither of these guys. Wow, that doesn't sound good. Ouch. Which we feel is a high possibility if David doesn't start showing off some personality that has something to do with how much he hates Jordan. Whatever happens, it's bound to be entertaining television. The Bachelorette airs Mondays at 8 p.m. on ABC. So I might have to actually see that. I'm more of an Unreal kind of guy, but this whole David the Chicken versus Jordan thing has me intrigued. I cannot lie. It does. Definitely has me intrigued. And in more news, Boots Riley of hip-hop group The Coup, he's the rapper and frontman of that band, and the Socialist Streets Socialist. I'm saying it wrong. He also has a side project with Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine, and it's all with S's and a C. And I don't want to missay it. But I'm going to tell you what it is. Let's see. But Boots Riley, though, the reason why I mention this is because he has directed his first film. I'm going to talk about that in one moment. Just trying to, what's it called? I want to give you this info. His Street Sweeper Social Club. Yes, he's made two records. So Boots Riley and Tom Morello, that's their side project, Street Sweeper Social Club, where Boots is rhyming and Tom is playing his phenomenal guitar. Like I said, Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine and from Audioslave. So yeah, so Boots Riley at Sundance Institute Vanguard Award presentation for Sorry to Bother You screening. So he got an award for his new film that we haven't seen. It's coming out soon. He's the latest Sundance Institute Vanguard Award winner. Last week, director Boots Riley was recognized for his debut feature, Sorry to Bother You, at the theater at Ace Hotel in downtown Los Angeles. To celebrate Riley and the upcoming release of the absurdist satire, Forrest Whitaker, who's one of the film's producers and cast members, Lakeith Stanfield, who's also a co-star on Atlanta with Donald Glover, a.k.a. Childish Gambino, and Tessa Thompson, who is in Thor Ragnarok, and she's also in Westworld, and she was the love interest for Michael B. Jordan in Creed. Jermaine Fowler, Steven Yeun, Danny Glover, and Kate Berlant attended a special screening. Hey, I saw one trailer for this film. I'm looking forward to seeing it. Looks like it's going to be really funny. And really good. After the award presentation, the musician-turned-filmmaker said the movie wouldn't have gotten made without Sundance. Coming in as a musician saying you have a script, nobody wants to hear that, he joked. People say, of course you want to make a movie, and you probably want to get a line of shoes, too. Well, to have Sundance's stamp of approval, I could be like, all right, mother lover, this is real. Yes, that's my censor. The Chicago native admits the movie is more relevant than ever. Okay, so he's from Chicago, but he also resides in Oakland. So, unfortunately, the world hasn't changed enough to make the movie irrelevant, he said. It's of the time and the movement going on right now. There's a real cool picture with him standing next to Forrest Whitaker. I think that's great that he got Forrest Whitaker to be a producer on his film. Academy Award winning actor. But Mr. Whitaker's also he co-produced Fruitvale Station 2, I believe. So Mr. Whitaker has been, he's been supporting the independent filmmaking scene. So it's very nice. It's very cool. I've always liked him anyway. He's a great actor. According to the LA Times, Sorry to Bother You exemplifies Boots' uncompromising and fearless independent vision, said Michelle Satter, founding director of the Sundance Institute feature film program. In a statement, when he was a fellow at our 2015 director's lab, his official bio noted that he had never won an award for artistic achievement, and we're so pleased to change that with this celebration. Yeah. Sorry to Bother You is an alternate present-day version of Oakland. Telemarketer Cassius Green, played by Lakeith Stanfield, discovers a magical key to professional success, propelling him into a macabre universe. There's also a really cool picture with Boots Riley and Rosario Dawson, and she's kind of giving a goofy look in the picture. She's having fun, apparently. So, this picture is... Yeah, at the same spot, the Institute for the Honors. So he's got a picture with Forrest Whitaker and Rosario Dawson. Okay, it's pretty good. Last year, screenwriter and director Dee Reeves won the Vanguard Award for her highly acclaimed film, Mudbound. I didn't know that. That is an excellent film on Netflix. So I may have to talk about that film. Yeah, in a television podcast. The Sundance Institute Vanguard Awards celebrate the innovation, originality, and independent spirit of artists and their feature film and program. The annual awards honor two filmmakers, one artist who is a leader in the independent film community, and one emerging artist who embodies visionary and storytelling and engages audiences in fresh and exciting ways. So once again, that film is called Sorry to Bother You. And if I can tell you when it's coming out, let me see. Oh, it will be in select theaters July 6th and everywhere else July 13th. So, and it stars Lakeith Stanfield, Tessa Thompson, Jermaine Fowler, Omari Hartwick, Terry Crews, Danny Glover, Armie Hammer, and Steven Yeun. Okay. Wow, he got a great cast for this film. He got Danny Glover in this movie? Okay. All right. Wow. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that film. All right, Mr. Rowdy, kudos to you. Congratulations on your award. That is definitely amazing. What Chloe's astrologer revealed about Tristan and didn't want to tell her about True. And the plot thickens. And True's connection with Trump. Okay. Astrologer Susan Miller also reveals to Fab what she didn't want Chloe to know about baby True. Chloe Kardashian and Tristan Thompson have remained out of the spotlight since the birth of daughter True Thompson back in April. Just days after Tristan's reckless cheating scandal took the entire internet by storm, 2Fab spoke with Chloe's astrologer, Susan Miller, who the Kardashian recruited to read her daughter's birth chart. The Astrology Zone founder told us that despite all the damage, Chloe and Tristan really are right for each other. Okay. Chloe was born on June 27th, which makes her a Cancer. Tristan was born on March 13th, which making him a Pisces. According to Miller, those two zodiac signs, both of which align with the element water, are actually innately compatible. That is true. Water signs are compatible with other water signs. That would be Pisces, Cancer, and Scorpio. Water signs are emotional, Miller said, and in society, the word emotional had almost a criticism until we realized people with emotional intelligence were way ahead of the others. It's what separates us from the other animals in the kingdom, our acute sensitivity to others. The astrologer also foresees more babies in the Kardashians' future. Cancers make some of the best mothers, Miller said. That's when they find their niche, when they have children. I think Chloe will have more children. I think she'll have at least one more, if not more than that. Okay. Although Miller did not say whether Chloe would be having more children with Tristan, she did say Pisces tend to make great fathers. Okay. Miller also wanted to make one thing clear. Any sign can get along with any sign with effort. This is a very close family unit, she added, of the Thompson-Kardashian couple. This is a loving set of parents, and I'm sure Chloe must feel changed from this experience. So now here's True's birth chart. True's birth chart. Okay. And what Miller didn't tell Chloe about her daughter. Miller previously told Chloe that her baby girl, born in Aries, had prominent personality traits of Aquarius and Pisces, just like her father. Aries tend to be pioneers. They tend to want to do things first, Miller told 2Fab. Aries is also the sign of athletic competition. They want to win whatever they get involved in. Aquarius rule all things that have not been invented, not done, and not embraced yet by society. Here's the most extraordinary part of this chart, Miller said before explaining how True and President Donald Trump have something in common, at least in astrological terms. True has Uranus conjuncts the sun. Some people have it, some people don't. The astrologer said, our president has Uranus conjuncts the sun. But I told Chloe's representatives not to tell Chloe that because she'll make assumptions that aren't true. It means that Lil True's job is to challenge traditions, which I feel our president does in an extreme way. Okay. That's a very interesting birth chart reading. That's very cool. Okay. And there's the diagram of it right here. And when you do anyone's chart for, you know, for the astrological chart, it's important to know the time that they're born and where they're born. That helps you with the chart. So, wow. The more you know, just like the TV commercial, I tell you. Well, folks, thanks again for listening to Golden State Media Concepts Entertainment Podcast. This is your Captain Keith. Hope you had a good time, people of the planet Earth, the good people of the planet Earth, and the known universe. I know I did. I appreciate you all. And once again, I will see you somewhere out in space.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Entertainment Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. From movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.